Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Joanne Cantwell, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, have you promised yourself a digital detox for January, or maybe to cancel a subscription or two to save some money? If so, our next item might be of interest to you, because there's plenty of tech-focused resolutions you can make for the coming year. And who better than our Irish Times business and technology journalist, Ciara O'Brien, to advise us? Ciara, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks for having me.
It's kind of like New Year, but same old bad tech habits for an awful lot of us, isn't it? What are the top tips for you in terms of getting down and weeding our bad tech habits out?
I think, well, look, the one thing that most people can do this year, if you're a social media user, and that's be more inclusive when you're posting on social media. And I don't mean, like, you know, second guess every single word in case you might offend somebody. Look, we all try to, I would like to think most of us at least try not to offend people on a daily basis. But what I'm talking about is when you're posting images on social media, a lot of that is invisible to screen readers, because you need to add this little thing called alt text, which most people don't even know exists. And the problem is unless you've come up against these roadblocks yourself when using technology, you're unlikely to know they even exist. So I didn't realize that you could actually add alt text on Facebook. You can. So what it is it's basically a short description of the image. And, you know, they say things like avoid editorializing. So, you know, just give a concise description of what's in the image. And that will help a screen reader for somebody who has issues with their vision and who relies on a screen reader to read web pages on the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, that includes social media. The other thing is hashtag spam, which we all are guilty of and which I have tried to dial back on a lot, because, again, that can make things very difficult for screen readers. And when you type a hashtag all in lowercase, it comes out as gobbledygook. So what they ask people to do is, you know, to camel case it. So, you know, if you're writing tech New Year's resolutions, to capitalize each word, okay, so that the screen reader can distinguish between them. And it's something so simple, and wouldn't take an awful lot if everybody did it. You know, it doesn't take a huge amount out of your day, and it's not just a huge change.
That's what struck me as you described it there. It's so simple. Then you have another tip in terms of time-sucking platforms, and we've all been on platforms that take so much time, and then you realise an hour or two has gone by.
Yeah, we've all done it. And I think it's worse now because there's so many competing platforms. And, you know, with the kind of the downfall, the use of X and Twitter falling quite a bit, there's all these other ones that have sprung up to take their place. So I have accounts on Mastodon, Threads, Blue Sky, TikTok, Instagram. It's a full-time job.
How do you keep them all going?
I don't. I kind of go through like a flurry of using one. I mean, like LinkedIn is another one, you know, where I'll post regularly. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this regularly because this is good for me. And it's not. What it makes me feel is like a massive failure every time I don't post something that, you know, I think I should. But then, you know, half the time now I'm second guessing myself, going, do people really need to know my opinion on this? Is the world being in any way improved by me sharing this link? You know, do I even know what I'm talking about? Which I'm sure a lot of people ask themselves on a regular basis.
Oh, if only more social media users were like you, Ciara, asking themselves those questions.
You don't belong on social media with those questions.
I'm not
fit for social media. I mean, clearly, if I'm on social media, I should always know what I'm talking about, even when it's quite clear to everybody that I don't have a notion what I'm talking about. But as I said, I'm sure there's plenty of people who've said that about me to my face and behind my back, you know, about the stuff I do on a daily basis.
You know, a friend of mine has, as part of her New Year tech sort of resolutions, she's actually deleted almost all her social media apps, and she's just kept one or two that she, you know, she finds fine just to keep her a little bit plugged in. And like, she's
only been
doing it for a week, and she says her life's transformed.
I will say that is a very good idea. However, I have tried that and I have gone back on every single one of them, because eventually you get this thing of like, you know, oh, maybe this is happening and I don't know anything about it. Or the other thing is to make your phone grayscale, as particularly after a certain time, or use the screen time locks to lock out certain apps after a certain time. Now, I do that for my kids with games and stuff like that. So once it hits a certain time in the day, even if they have the iPad, they can't use it. To be honest, they rarely do have it. I'll just put that before I get all the barrage of texts telling me what a terrible parent I am for giving my children digital devices. They rarely have them. But on the off chance that I haven't noticed and I've forgotten that they have it, it will lock out. Now, you can do that for yourself. Now, obviously, you know the password to get around these, but it is a massive pain to have to do it every single time. And turning your screen to grayscale is supposed to make your phone less addictive. To be honest, it just made me feel really down.
Make it gray. It doesn't work, does it?
Yeah, you make it. No, it didn't work for me. I had to pick it up for work. It just made things 10 times worse. So,
it just, you know, everything just looks
work
gray.
For some,
yeah,
is it,
yeah, very
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, and drab. And the idea is, look, your phone is addictive. All these bright colours, you know, it's very addictive. It pulls you back in. Make it grey. It instantly makes it less appealing.
I mean, it sounds like something that would work for toddlers, you know, but in terms
toddlers
of adults,
and apparently women in their late 30s, early 40s. So, you know.
Come here, talk to me about emojis, because, people are so divided on this. You have some people who use emojis everywhere, some people who don't use them at all. And I don't like using them generally, but I've also found in the last sort of decade or so of both communicating both on text and on social media, that sometimes you sort of have to use them just so that your intent comes across, you know, because it can be difficult to get sort of the tone right, you know, in just a short few words.
The problem with emojis is what you see as a friendly emoji, I might see as the passive aggressive smiley emoji, which I hate with the fire of a thousand suns. I do actually think, though, the best one, the one I use most often is, you know, that one that melts, it looks like it's melting into the ground.
Yeah.
That's the one I use most often, because that describes my day to day life. You know, I have two small children, basically the half of my life is me feeling like my head is melting. But, you know, I think like there's a lot of kind of politics and generational gaps around the use of emojis. And we're always being told, oh, Gen Z thinks this emoji is, you know, so passe. I actually don't care, because most people I'm talking to are, you know, my age. So they don't care either. But look, you know, I think when we overuse emojis, again, coming back to social media, that's another thing that's very exclusionary for people who are using screen readers. When you are posting something on whatever social media platform you are still on, read it in your head and read every single one of those emojis as a screen reader would. So it's like those crying with laughing with a crying face. If you use that 10 times, read that to yourself over and over again. That's what you're inflicting on people.
Yeah.
So
can I ask you about your final bit of advice really briefly? You say be careful or be more choosy as to who you share your email address with.
Ooh. Oh God, yes. My email is the source, I think, of almost a marital discord at this point, because my husband is the type of person who deals with every email as it comes in, reads it, deletes it if it's not necessary.
No,
right?
No.
I cannot do that. I have 25,000 unread emails in my work email alone. 90% of them are probably spam, and I have about 15,000 personal emails, and most of them are probably newsletters I signed up to for a discount.
Okay.
So I made a decision at the start of this year. I was going to cut down on all that. So I'm unsubscribing myself from all that stuff. And now in future, what I'm using is either a throwaway email address that when the spam gets too much, I can just shut it down, then I never have to look at it again. Or if you're an Apple user, you can use the hide my email thing, which creates a unique email address. You use it only for that website, and then you can just disable it, and that email will never reach your inbox. And it's amazing and it's life-changing, and I have zero unread emails in my inbox today.
I must say, though, it's really lovely to meet someone who's worse than me in terms of unread emails. I have 1,500 in my personal, and I thought I was bad, but 15,000?
Yeah, 25,000 in my work one, 15,000 in my personal. Add it all up, and we're just about approaching my sister, who has 44,000, as she showed me today, and 140 unread text messages.
I don't know what to say to that. Look, it's you're incredible in so many ways. Ciara O'Brien, Irish Times business and technology journalist. Thank you very much.